ready to go?
I'm ready.
Don't hold back now, guys.
Here's Hamhuis cutting in. Weak shot. Stop. Rebound. They score. Henrik Sedin with 2 minutes to go. And the Canucks have tied the game at four.
Horvat gets a step. Headed for the net against Burns. Bo Horvat scores. What a spectacular goal by Bo Horvat.
With our first selection, we select from the WHL Calgary Hitmen, Jake Virtanen.
This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Now, here's Chris, Clay, Matt, and Adam. These guys really need some nicknames.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Podcast from CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris Golden, at LightForce on Twitter, joined in studio by Matt Lee, at MattLee980, and by phone, the blog father, JJ Guerrero, at Canucks Hockey. And boy, do we have an episode for you.
Oh, man, this is going to be painful.
You know, the fact that we actually waited a day because we're like, you know, the Canucks are going to make deals. We really don't want to miss out on talking about them and going on an entire week. And what did we wait for? What did we wait for?
Oh, absolutely, we're still waiting.
Nothing.
Still waiting.
Well, I mean, we get to talk about Adam Cracknell going to Edmonton.
You know, good
that
on
that was the one deadline move that was made.
Good on the kid for getting an opportunity, and the fact that he played while on waivers, that was kind of neat. But apparently there was actually trade demand for Cracknell, I was reading. There were teams calling saying, hey, what can we get to get Cracknell? Leading up to the deadline, and the Canucks throw him on waivers for free?
Oh, man.
I don't understand it.
What is there to understand? I mean, you know, we needed a soundbite that just started off with, like, a bunch of people throwing tires onto a fire, explosion, screaming, agony. Do you have something for us, Matt?
Well, I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Perfect.
Oh, well, before we get into Rewind to talk about the week that wasn't, what's been going on in your world, JJ?
No, you know what? We're not even going to do this. We're just going to get right into this. We're going to get right into this.
You don't want to know.
No holds barred coming up right now.
Yeah, so that sucked.
Like, it's bad.
I don't know how to describe it. Like, I'm negative. I'm Mr., you know, Dark Lord of this Mulesphere or whatever. And sure, I don't maybe wear the tinfoil hat like JJ does here on the phone. But I was sitting here at work today, like, speechless. I could not fathom how nothing happens.
You know what the worst thing about all of this is? Is watching Vancouver's most annoying rivals in Calgary and Toronto accrue a whole bunch of second, third, and fourth round picks for their garbage players, all of which pale in comparison, in my mind, to Dan Hamhuis.
But there were no deals to be had, Matt.
Apparently, there were no deals to be had. We'll hear from Jim Benning. I've got clips of Jim Benning and Dan Hamhuis. In fact, you know what? Why don't we just hear right from Dan Hamhuis? He obviously addressed Vancouver's media today, talking about the trade that didn't happen.
We opened ourselves to Chicago and Dallas early on. And, you know, the Canucks, they did relay, you know, I mean, that's certainly something for Jim, probably more about how much they did relay to us. And I think that they probably relayed most teams that were interested. And, you know, if something... You know, one of the contending teams in the West that wasn't Dallas or Chicago, you know, offered something to the Canucks that would have been worth passing along to me. I think that they would have, and you know, I think though we would have, you know, had to take a look at it for sure, take a serious look at it. We weren't, you know, just those two teams and cold out. It, you know, we probably would have had to take a look.
So Dan Hamhuis clearly open to the idea of going to either Dallas or Chicago.
And you hear him talk there, there's obviously more organizations that were interested.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The fact that he's saying, oh, the Canucks came to me, and then he pauses, maybe that's for Jim to say, but here are the two teams I said yes to.
And this is what I think should really piss off a lot of Vancouver Canucks fans, is Dan Hamhuis, despite having his no movement clause, says to himself and to the media, I would have been okay with Chicago and Dallas. And that right there gives Jim Benning all the tools he needs. He has two interested teams that were willing to compete for Dan Hamhuis' services. And that's all you need to drive up the price a little bit, is two teams that want. So with Dan Hamhuis saying, I'm willing to go to Chicago and Dallas, that gives Jim Benning all the cards in the world to make this trade happen. It is no longer Dan Hamhuis' fault that he has a no movement clause. He says, I'm willing to go, and now here it is, Jim, make it happen.
And it's not even that this all came down to the last minute. I mean, I know there's some criticism there on Benning about, you know, well, why didn't you engage Hamhuis earlier and all that sort of stuff. And it's clear from what he said that this actually happened a week ago. You know, Jim Benning had 1 week to get a deal done with one of those two teams. He had 1 week to drive Hamhuis' value up. I mean, he even said, hey, if there's another team that's interested and they made a good offer, pass it on.
And he even said that he was interested in Chicago, and he told them he was interested in Chicago on Wednesday. This is the day before the Andrew Ladd trade even went down.
Well, that's right. And I think that was if you look at the package that Chicago gave to Winnipeg for Ladd, that's the exact package that Chicago is willing to send to Vancouver for Hamhuis. You know, so obviously something happened there. You can't blame Hamhuis for it. And, you know, I mean, if I'm Jim Benning and I've got a guy that's about to walk on July 1st, now, you know, maybe he resigns in the offseason, maybe he doesn't. You know, but you have a guy that's offering a first-round pick and a pretty decent prospect. I mean, Dano's okay. He had a hot start in the league and then kind of leveled off. But there's still a first-round pick there. I mean, don't you want to jump on that?
If someone calls you and says, hey, we would offer you a second-round draft pick for Dan Hamhuis, would you not take that?
I would have taken it.
Well, I think at this point, yeah. I mean, knowing what we know now, no, why wouldn't we?
Well, yeah, exactly. But I guess, sort of to preface that, you know, leading up to the deadline itself, if that was ever on the table, it would be asinine to have said, no, I think we can get a first round. And if someone comes to you and says, hey, I got a first round draft pick, regardless of what else is attached to it, how do you say no, I think he's worth more? Like, I don't see him as a top 1-2 defenseman. I mean, maybe on some teams he would be, but not on a contending team.
On a contending, I mean, you can argue that Hamhuis is the best defenseman that was out on the market. Right?
No doubt, but that doesn't elevate his value. Like, you don't overpay for your 5-6 spot, and I think he would fill in on the 3-4. But it just blows my mind that there wasn't anything. Like, Chicago apparently was still interested in Hamhuis. The way the Chicago media are telling it, they wanted Hammer right up till today, even though they had already made a big deal.
And I think today the deal would have been them taking back Brian Bickell in the deal just to make the salary cap dollars work. But even then, it's like, I would take Bickell and a second if it meant getting that second round pick for Dan Hamhuis.
And seeing as the Canucks have no problem burying money in the minors, waving people left, right, and center, just put Bickell on waivers.
I mean, at the end of the day, for me, this all falls on Jim Benning. He had one valuable asset in Dan Hamhuis, who, again, was willing to go to Chicago and Dallas, and the interest was there from both of those teams. This should have been a home run for Jim Benning, especially with the way that this team has shown a trend in the past of ushering defensemen like Jason Garrison and Kevin Bieksa out the door.
I was just going to say, he had one job. If there was anything that Jim Benning had to do today was to get some assets back, whether it's Hamhuis or Verbata. Doesn't matter. Get something back. These guys are going to walk.
And the end result is they're -1, they lost on waivers.
It's not even that they were going to walk either. Like, Dan Hamhuis has said time and time again, he wants to stay in Vancouver. He would like to be here beyond this season. He's even suggested, maybe I'll take another hometown discount just to stay here. So this is why it was a disaster. The Canucks had a chance to improve their team in the long run, which is perfect for a team looking at a rebuild. Without giving up anything in return, Hamhuis has already made it clear he wants to come back to Vancouver. The Canucks can clearly have him back next season at that discounted rate. And Benning says no, that he'd rather let those two waste away for the rest of the season in Vancouver and get nothing back in return.
Well, just on that note, we're talking about Hamhuis and the fact that he said yes to going to Dallas. And the word was, at the time, Dallas is making a hard push. So here's a couple quotes for you. On the afternoon show here on 1040, Moj had said that he had been told a deal was done between Nil and Benning, and yet the Canucks pulled it off the table. And he follows it up. You can speculate why. Only 45 minutes later, Farhan Lalji, and I respect Farhan. I've never noticed him to throw stuff on a wall in the hope that something sticks. He goes to say, after the Russell trade, the Stars went back to Vancouver and offered a higher pick than what they gave Calgary and a prospect. And it's believed that Vancouver didn't return the call. Now, how petty is that kind of BS? Like, I made this comment on Twitter that that's pettier than the actual Canucks fans on Twitter. And we're a pretty damn petty group. Like, what kind of BS is that?
So, just so we're clear, this is the deal that was sent for Chris Russell. It was Chris Russell to Dallas for Jyrki Jokipäkä, Brett Pollock, and a conditional second-round pick that does become a first-round pick should Dallas reach the Western Conference Finals. So if what Farhan Lalji is saying is correct, perhaps the pick is not even for this year, maybe it's for next year because of the fact that it's a conditional second that could become a first. So are you looking at a prospect, one of those two that was offered to Calgary, and maybe a first or second rounder next season? I would take that deal. Right. I would take that deal and run.
Damn straight. And yet they don't pick up the phone.
They don't even pick up the phone.
Apparently, I was reading that the Canucks did counter an offer earlier, but made no headway. If this comes back to the fact that we're not going to deal with Dallas because of the whole issue between the two ownership groups, I'm sorry. I'm not a paying fan to pay attention to a pissing match between two grown-ass men. Like, if it's come down to that, and I know we've talked about this in the past, and I know that this is pure speculation, because no one's going to come out and confirm this. But where there is smoke, there's bloody well a damn fire. And I've been watching this in the Dallas media. I've been hearing from some very reliable sources, and they're all saying the same damn thing. Like, if that's not gross mismanagement, I don't know what is. And as a fan, like, I love this team. It hurts so much. And it's getting to the point where I'm like, screw this. Like, why do I care? Why do I even turn on the TV and watch another game? Why do I pay another dollar and sit in the damn stadium?
Ouch. That was pretty real.
Well, and I don't know how else to position it.
Absolutely, it's true. You have every right to be saying that. And you're red in the face, and I totally agree with you. For me, if I'm a Vancouver Canucks fan, what reason do I have to throw another dollar into sitting in another seat at Rogers Arena when this team, from the ownership to management to the team itself, are poorly executing themselves like this? It is unreasonable for fans to be expected to pay for a product like this when the team from the top down is pulling this kind of BS.
By the way, guys, I mean, I don't know how much stock I'd take into that whole ownership meddling thing with respect to Dallas. Because, I mean, we've traded with Dallas since the Aquilini's taken over. I mean, you got Derek Roy from Dallas.
I mean, even beyond that, like, Aquilini and the Gilardi family, they're even working together towards putting a ski resort in Squamish. So that alone tells you that business is business, and they're willing to work together to improve each other's interests.
If that's the case, if it wasn't to do with ownership meddling, if we, let's say, okay, that's not happening, then again, the only other explanation is that you have a GM who doesn't understand that asset management is a thing. Like, is he the guy who went and circled March 1st on the War Room calendar, not realizing that this year was a leap year?
By the way, I'm glad to hear you actually say asset management, Chris, you know, just to kind of justify me and my tinfoil hat and all that stuff.
Well, I poke fun at your tinfoil hat, but that's one truth. Like, look at how he's managed assets. Hey, guys, we've got seven people available. We're going to probably waive four of them.
Let's take a 15-second timeout to hear from Jim Benning at today's press conference.
Well, it wasn't from a lack of trying. The market this year, you know, with there wasn't a lot of buyers in the marketplace, and the teams that were buying weren't really paying, you know, a lot to get those players. So, we tried hard to, you know, figure out what the teams that were buying, you know, to figure something out. But at the end of the day, teams went in a different direction.
All right, time in. What?
There were 10 first and second round picks that were traded in the last week. I think 11 if you count from a month ago.
And with that, how do you even get off by saying this was not a buyer's market? The climate that the Canucks were entering as sellers coming into today indicates that they should have and could have gotten a first and or a second for some of their assets.
Well, you look at what all the other teams were getting back, and you mentioned it earlier, Matt. I mean, you look at what Calgary got for guys like Kudler,
second and a fourth,
Chris Russell. You see what Leafs were able to get a second round pick, right? I mean, Dale Weiss and Tom Fleischman.
Second round pick.
No, he's a second round pick.
There you go.
I mean, come on. I mean, you can't tell me that buyers weren't willing to pay those prices.
Or better yet, Benning's idea of reality is so skewed that he has no clue what a market looks like when it hits him in the face. Because you're right. Everything that you've said to this point completely invalidates his argument. And yet, let's just say that, okay, there weren't good deals to be had. Can someone explain to me why you don't go and trade a Verbata or a Hamhuis to get something where you're potentially going to get nothing for them?
Right.
We saw the same thing happen with Matthias. And the fact that look at what Toronto just did. Toronto signs him to a cheapy contract, and then they trade him to Colorado for picks.
Yeah, asset management.
Toronto's got more picks this year than we do in the next 2 years combined.
Toronto has two picks in every single round of the draft this year, except for the sixth and seventh, I believe.
That's just unbelievable.
This is Jim Benning on asking, wouldn't you have rather gotten a little something than a complete nothing? This is Benning.
Yeah, and that's a fair question. But if we could have got draft picks, or we could have, I come from a draft background and I value picks, and that's how we're going to rebuild this thing, is through getting draft picks and drafting well and developing our players. So if we could have recouped draft picks, we would have done that and we would have been on our way.
What? I don't have the exact quote, but wasn't this the same man who earlier said that they were looking at prospects already developed down the line more so than draft picks? And then he does this about face and says we would have welcomed taking on draft picks?
You know, they have it. They had the season ticket mailer out last week about renewing for next year and all that sort of stuff. And they had this, part of the package was a bunch of, I'll just call them buzz phrases, trying to give you hope as a season ticket holder, please renew your tickets. And one of the buzz phrases that was there was accelerated development. When they're talking about the young guys and bringing in young guys. So it was clear that was the approach that they were doing. They wanted to bring in partially developed players. And it's backed up by the transactions that he's had earlier, with Granlund and Larson. He gave up Shinkarak to get Granlund.
Don't get me started on a kid that's playing in the KHL, can't play for the Oilers, and yet it cost us a bloody
draft. Yeah, we'll get into those.
Well, we didn't even trade for the kid. We traded for the rights for the kid, So I don't know. That totally doesn't make any sense to me that he's saying that there's no... how many draft picks exchange hands today?
Quite a few.
Right?
I'm angry.
Okay. Benning later went on to suggest that, Dallas perhaps chose Chris Russell over Hamhuis. And I'll give him a little bit of leeway here in the sense that, yes, Hamhuis has made it clear he would like to be back in Vancouver, which pretty much slams the door on him signing with the team that traded for him. Whereas Russell, there's sort of the possibility that he can re-up with Dallas down the line. That said, Hamhuis still becomes a pure playoff rental. And that should not dissuade his value any less than it should be. Hamhuis is the better player, both statistically speaking and smart stat speaking, than Chris Russell.
Right, and if you're Jim Neal, why are you renting players to begin with? Why are you renting players this year? Because you want to make a run this year. Who cares what happens in the offseason? Russell's a UFA, too. There's no guarantee that he's going to re-sign with the Stars. I mean, I heard his ask was like $6 million a year. Maybe he gets in Dallas, maybe he doesn't. But the fact is, Jim Neal's job is to get the best player on his roster that will help his team make a deep, deep run into the playoffs. And to me, that's Dan Hamhuis, not Chris Russell.
Regardless, okay, let's go and say Hamhuis makes it clear that he doesn't want to sign anywhere but Vancouver, and Vancouver, let's say, is going to, you know, dance with him and offer him something. How is that still not worth a second round draft pick?
Exactly. It should still be worth something.
Because I look at Hamhuis, if Bieksa can get you a second round in the offseason, there's no reason why Hamhuis can't get you a second round at the deadline. Now, one thing I want to talk about is the fact that you read or you watch what people are saying on Twitter. You hear them calling into the talk shows, and there's people out there that are currently taking shots at Hamhuis for hurting the team. To point that topic out, or flesh that out a little bit more, Ryan Kesler is hated by this fan base because he demanded out, and he gave the Canucks a list of two teams he wanted to go to. Hamhuis doesn't want to leave Vancouver, yet still gives them a list of two teams he would go to.
And he earned that no movement clause that was given by Mike Gillis.
Yeah, and if this circumstances were different, if Kesler wanted to stay in Vancouver, did not want to leave, and the team were to say, hey, no, we want to move you, where would you go? And he said, oh, I'll go to Chicago and Anaheim. So be it. He's doing what the team has asked him to do. No more, no less. But he wanted out. There is no correlation between the two. I have much respect for Hamhuis to simply say, you know what, here's a couple teams, and if there's something else, as long as it's in the West, I'm willing to talk. Like, there's no way this is on Hamhuis. Like, I'm going to possibly call your good buddy out this morning on the radio, but he was going on to say that Hamhuis is going to be hated by Canucks Nation because he turned down a trade. And
this
that's
is,
completely
this is
off the
zero
line.
On Dan Hamhuis.
No, there's no reason to hate on Hamhuis. I mean, this guy's bled Canucks blue for the last 6 years. And you're right. I mean, he left a lot of money on the table to sign here. You know, he wanted that no movement. He wanted to come home. He wanted that no movement clause. He gave up probably $2 million a year to sign in Vancouver.
Oh, he probably gave up more considering the number of teams that were trading for his rights. Just to the hope that they could convince him that their city was better than Vancouver.
Well, right. I mean, the Islanders, from what I understand, pretty much gave him a blank check. Write the number, write the term, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, there's zero hate there. And you know, he was accommodating the team. You know, he knew very well the situation that they were in. They knew they weren't going to win this year. They knew that they needed some pieces. You know, so I don't understand. I really don't understand why there should be that hate from.
Well, and I don't understand either. And if you're a listener who's like, no, it's on Hammer, I'd like you to let me know why. So I can go and call you out on air. I have no problem. Let's get into it. We'll have you on as a guest so you can explain to me why this would be on Hammer. That's how passionate I am about that. And I mean, you don't necessarily hear that type of emotion out of me.
All that said, I mean, after all of this, would you want Dan Hamhuis back on your team?
I've got no issue with him being back.
Absolutely.
I like Hammer. In the right role and the right price,
no
problem.
What's the price?
I'm going to say he's in the 2 to 3 mil range.
Mm-hmm.
If he continues playing where he is, a one-year contract for 4, maybe not a problem. But he's got to fit within the cap as it would pertain to being on that second pairing.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to get double that in the open market.
Oh, no doubt. The open market's going to throw, you know, $5-6 million at him, no doubt.
Can you imagine the fan outrage if Hamhuis ends up signing with another team after all of this?
Well, you know what?
I don't think it happens, but you imagine?
There's going to be teams throwing money at him. Like, if they throw money in term,
why would you even bother wanting to be part of this, you know, blank show?
Well, the other thing you got to think of is, does Benning even want Hamhuis back? I mean,
better.
We were on the chat. You know, I think I mentioned this on our chat a few weeks ago that, you know, Benning, he's not convinced that Hamhuis should be part of this group moving forward.
So if that's the case, why the hell do you keep him around just to lose him in a couple of months? Like, that makes no sense. Don't get me started.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me either. Because if you look at the D next year, it's pretty set. On the left side, you've got Edler, Spezza, and Pedan.
Yeah. Okay. For Bada, why is he still on the team?
I think there were, like, I mean, Benning says there was no concrete offers for Radim Verbata, but for me, it's like, how do you not even get a fourth-round pick for Radim Verbata when you see Yuri Hudler get a second and a fourth?
Like,
they're different players, absolutely. Both of them having down years compared to the season prior, but there's got to be a market for Radim Verbata somewhere. If the Canucks offered to pick up the salary, there's got to be someone out there that's willing to give something for Radim Verbata.
Yeah, and you know what? Unfortunately, I don't know which 8 teams Verbata put on the list, because he's got a no trade clause, right?
Limited no trade. And Benning says he talked to every one of those teams that was on the list, and all of them either said no, they were moving in a different direction, or they weren't buying.
Yeah.
But even then, I have a hard time believing that too. There's got to be someone on that list that was willing to kick tires on him.
Let's say Verbata throws 8 teams on a list. Is he going to throw 8 teams on the list he doesn't think the Canucks will move him to because he doesn't want to leave Vancouver for a couple of months? Or is he going to put 8 teams on the list who have a shot and are looking to compete? If you're Verbata, you're not back next season. I mean, the Canucks might try to bring him back, but I don't think Verbata comes back to the organization.
He's not coming back.
So I don't necessarily see him wanting to stay a little bit longer. I think he goes and throws down 8 teams that are contending. And if you can tell me, let's say the top 8 teams in the league, let's say that's who he puts down on this list. There's not one of them that wouldn't go and put him on as a depth forward for something.
Right. And I mean, we saw all the teams that were that acquired wingers, scoring wingers. I mean, we heard that a lot over the last week or so. You know, a lot of teams were looking for scoring wingers. Panthers, you know, Ducks. I mean, all these guys were. I mean, they acquired. You know, they got Fleischman, Dale Weiss, and you know, like I don't know. I mean, Hudler.
Who would you rather have on your team, Dale Weiss or Radim Verbata?
Well, right?
Dale's had a great year in Montreal. He's actually had a couple good seasons in Montreal. But to me, there's no competition between those two.
No.
Okay. How about
especially if the Canucks were willing to eat up some of the salary. I mean, they could have had Verbata for $2.5 million, so 600 grand the rest of the year.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll have more on the trade deadline or lack thereof or whatever the hell you call it from the Vancouver Canucks.
If that's how we're going to battle, we're not going to have a chance to win.
You can do it.
So shit's not going right. F***ing get your heads out of your ass and make it work by outworking the opposition.
Oh, no. We suck again.
They think we're playing good, but they have no idea how we're going to come here. Forwards are getting to the offensive zone and grinding these b****s down here, hey?
We just sucked.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Oh, man. The Canucks are really, and I'm not even exaggerating, they're the laughing stock of the NHL right now.
A buddy of mine, diehard Oilers fan, messaged me wanting to know what's going on in Vancouver. I can't even begin to laugh at Vancouver because it's so sad. I feel bad that the Vancouver Canucks organization doesn't seem to know what it's doing, and that's saying something. I'm an Oilers fan.
Who takes the blame for this in your mind? Is it ownership? Is it management? I mean, there's enough blame to go around for everybody. It's not on Dan Hamhuis.
Are you talking specifically about the Hamhuis thing, or
yes,
are you talking about it, things generally?
Let's go with Hamhuis first.
Hamhuis, I think Benning's got to wear this.
Oh, I'd put it on Benning. I'd even go maybe say Weisbrod as well if he's involved in player
transactions. Well, it's at that level. You're looking at the GMs here.
I mean, for you guys, what's the confidence level on a scale of 1 to 10 in Jim Benning right now?
-1.
Yeah,
it's like below 1 for me at this point.
You know, when I filled out my season ticket holder survey, they did have a question, something about how good a job we think Benning and Linden and Desjardins and all of them are doing, and I think I answered 2 out of 10 on that question.
That's generous, because I gave that a 1.
This is the body of work of Jim Benning over the last month, and this is just the last month alone. He trades effectively Hunter Shinkaruk and a 5th-round pick for Marcus Granlund and the unsigned Philip Larson. Earlier, he swapped Jensen for Emerson Edom.
And gave up a pick.
Did they give up a pick at the Jensen deal?
Yeah, we gave up a six-rounder.
No.
We did.
Oh, my God. So, where do you get off by saying, we value picks? I would have taken picks if I could have. And then you're throwing them away like they've been candy lately.
You know what's stupid? I would actually give Benning credit when it comes to his ability to scout and draft. That's the one area I'll say he does well in.
You know what? And I don't want to bring it up because he's not that welcome in Vancouver these days either. But you say what you want about Mike Gillis. He made his fair share of bad moves, absolutely. But today is probably the worst management has ever looked since Mike Gillis's time. If Gillis saw a chance to improve his team back then, he did not hesitate to pull the trigger. Yeah, you can blame him for Luongo and how he handled Schneider. But not many people are complaining about how Schneider turned into Bo Horvat these days.
Dave Nonis could have made deals today.
Benning, in my mind, lacks the decisiveness that you need to be a general manager at the NHL level. Yeah, he gets praised as a scout, and perhaps it's justified. He's the kind of guy you want at your draft table or the kind of guy you want leading your team of scouts. But when it comes to making a move, a critical move that can shape your team, this is how it is. He lacks the balls to do it.
I don't think there's any competition. I mean, when you guys know, I'm pretty much on Team Gillis, and I was pretty upset when, you know, he got let go, and you know, when especially when Lawrence Gilman and Lauren Henning got let go. I mean, these guys were great at what they did. You know, and you look at some of the deadline deals that Mike Gillis pulled off. You know, like he got Lapierre, you know, Max Lapierre and Chris Higgins basically for nothing.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's funny you bring up Gilman. I mean, the reason Luongo is in Florida and the fact that the Canucks were able to make a deal was on Lawrence Gilman. Gilman was the guy who sat down, made that deal happen, put pen to paper, and put the pieces together. Gillis simply signed the trade form.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, this is a guy that didn't have the ability to do the job in Vancouver?
I don't think it was so much that he had, you know, he didn't have the ability to do the job. It was more,
I mean Gilman. It's not on Gillis. It's just like, I look at where Gilman was, and the fact that he was here last year. Do you foresee, actually, if Gilman's still in Vancouver, outside of the whole difference of opinion, which is apparently why they got rid of him, were too many voices in the room and they needed to silence some of them, do you see Frankie Corrado not being in Vancouver? Do you see the fact that they're having asset management problems?
Let's even remember that when the Canucks waived Frank Corrado in the first place, it was so they could make room for Adam Cracknell. And I find it absolutely ironic that the Canucks lose Cracknell on waivers. The Canucks don't have Frank Corrado. They still have Matt Barkowski. And yet they're still looking at a rebuild. That's how badly that sequence of moves was bungled.
And they gave up a fifth-round pick to get another Frankie Corrado, or to the rights to another Frankie
Corrado. Yeah, an unsigned Frankie Corrado that wasn't good enough to make the defense in Edmonton. This is a blue line in an organization that has absolutely no blue, and he couldn't make the cut. And that's the savior. That's the guy that's going to come to Vancouver and be the next, you know, Lidstrom.
Jim Benning should be fired. I'm just going to say it right now.
Do you think he survives? I think Desjardins has a better chance of surviving than Benning does.
Totally said that Desjardins was on the hot seat coming into today. But after today, I don't know how, after all of this fan fury, I don't know how Jim Benning is not on the hot seat. He has to be on the hot seat because of the fact he did nothing to get something back for Dan Hamhuis and or Radim Vrbata. You had to get something back for him. Here's Toronto. They've got Lou Lamoriello. And I can't even believe I'm going to say this, but I envy Toronto's situation. But they turned their crap of Daniel Winnick, Dion Phaneuf, Roman Polak, Nick Spaulding, Sean Mathias, and they turn them all into, get this, 4 second-round picks and 2 fourth-round picks for that pile of garbage. And you're telling me you couldn't get anything for Dan Hamhuis. Calgary, Yuri Hudler goes off to Florida. They get a second-round pick this year and a fourth-round pick, I think it's in 2018. Chris Russell turns into two prospects and a second. So now Calgary's got an additional pair of second-round picks and a fourth and two prospects to their name. And again, the Canucks have nothing. I don't know where Jim Benning gets off by saying there were no deals on the table.
I really think... How long's Benning's contract? Is it 4 or 5 years?
I don't know. I think it's irrelevant because they're clearly willing to fire someone, a.k.a. John Tortorella, even after signing them to a new deal.
So is the best deal that the Canucks have made this season been the second-round pick they're getting from Columbus for a Tortorella signing?
Or Bieksa. But then they fritter that pick away to get Brandon Sutter out of the deal with Nick Bonino.
Hey, but hey, they got a third-round pick back for that second.
Which they moved for Andre Pedan, if I'm not mistaken.
No, the Pedan one happened earlier.
Well, whatever.
But okay, here's a question for you guys. I know we're talking about Benning here, but how much of this do you place on Trevor? I mean, Trevor's the guy at the top. Trevor's the guy that hired Benning.
Okay.
And you know, correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't hear a lot of guys, a lot of names being bandied around for the GM job back then.
Well, I look at this. Trevor's running the organization the right way. He's not involved in the hockey operations or the decisions.
Yeah.
He might go and provide his insight, and he might say, here's what I think you do, but you let your guy run the team. Now, I think Trevor's honeymoon's over, and this is on him just as much as it's on Benning, but Trevor has one bullet in the gun. I don't think Benning gets that.
And as far as I'm concerned, I feel like Lyndon is just the Aquilini's puppet. He's the one who does damage control. I saw one tweet saying Lyndon's a little busy right now, and it shows a picture of a guy putting out fires all over the place.
Well,
Lyndon is the kind of guy you want to put on your talk show to answer for the moves that Benning does or does not make.
Yeah, and for those of you who want to hear or see Lyndon, watch for him on the local news, pretty much any channel tomorrow morning. He'll be on every radio station. In fact, he'll probably have a Twitter AMA going on. You know, actually, on that note, those town halls that are happening, and JJ, we were talking to you off air before we hit the record button that you might be going to one. How will those be? Like, I'd never been to a summer summit before where I saw Canucks fans boo someone from the organization. I was there when they booed John Daly. But last year, when Benning was walking up, he got it. And that's the first time I could say that I've seen Canucks fans with a little piss and vinegar fired up over the actions of the organization. And that was only because they went and traded Eddie Lack. That's really what the disgruntlement was last year. This year, these town halls, I would imagine people are going to come with gasoline and matches. They better bloody well have security checks and metal detectors out.
I don't think there's any doubt there's going to be a lot of pissed off people going to these things. But, you know, I mean, the flip side of that is you got to think of the people that usually go to these events, right? Like, you've got a lot of season ticket holders that bring their families, their kids, and, you know, I mean, yeah, you'll have the tan beers and all that stuff that sort of go. And
but the summer summit had that mix, and there were collectively the group was booing, and I would say 2/3 of the questions that were being asked of the team, you know, this is where the open mic concept was, you know, going awry, was the fact that they were asking tough questions, saying, hey, I'm not here to watch the team, you know, tell me what they want to do. I want to see the team tell me what they're going to do.
Right. And you know, and I think that's still what it, I mean, they do tend to be pretty tame, to be honest. I mean, yeah, there's going to be some pissed off people there. I mean, you're talking about people that invest thousands and thousands of dollars on this team, right?
So why would you, if you invest thousands and thousands of dollars, be willing to say, it's okay, here's my check. How much more do you need this year?
I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen. I'm just telling you that, you know, from the ones that I've been to in the past, even through the mid-90s, you know, they used to have a slightly different format where they separated out the full season ticket holders and the half seasons and the ice packs and the group leaders and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it was never a big sort of a big audience, kind of like what it is in the Summer Summit now. But, you know, the town halls are more kind of like what they were in the past, where it's a very small group. Like, I mean, the one I went to in Surrey, I think there was like less than 100 people there. So, yeah, I mean, you'll have a couple of people. You can always expect a couple of people just having, you know, kind of like those fluffy softball questions. And, you know, you have a little kid that's going up, Trevor, what's your favorite? Who was your favorite player growing up?
You know what I mean? That'll always be there.
That'll always be there.
The odds, though, of having upset people, like, there's nothing, I don't think there has, like, even in the 90s, like you're referencing, we've never had a point in time where I think people have been this pissed off.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not even during the Keenan years. No.
And, because we were resigned to failure back then, too, though.
Well, even then, though, but we were resigned to failure. I think there were still upset people. But you look at where the Canucks have been as a team or as an organization, or really where the fan base has been this season. You've got two distinct groups. You had the group that's saying tank, and you had the group that said make the playoffs. I think this single event of non-action has united both sides that are now going whiskey tango foxtrot, you screwed up.
Yeah.
When have you seen two distinct fan bases unite? You've got the playoff side that are saying, you're telling me you couldn't bring anything on board to actually make this happen? And I think the playoff side has been shrinking. Even Clay, who's on Team Playoffs, has been suggesting that the Canucks have a tough road ahead of them. You have the tank side. You have the moderate tankers like me who are like, okay, go get assets, but, you know, do your best. And you have the strong tankers like anything for Austin or nothing else. And we're all pissed off that they can't go and create prospects out of what they have in the organization. I can't see how you have this many pissed off people that you don't get that type of piss and vinegar in these events. Whether they're softball or not, whether they're small group or not, whether they're people who they're going to go and buy their season tickets regardless of how things go. Even if I was willing to come back next season, if I had season tickets and I could afford it, I probably would. I probably would be stupid enough to give them more of my money, but I would be the first person to try to speak. And I don't speak at these events. I sit there. I want to hide and I want to listen. And now I'm so fired up, I'd be more than happy to ask tough questions.
So if you're out there and you're willing to go to this town hall then, Chris, what's the challenge you have for the people, the season ticket holders who have a right to be pissed off? What would you say for them to be doing here?
Well, for me, there's questions I want answered. Why is it that I should give you another dollar of my hard-earned money to support an organization that has absolutely no direction? And I guarantee you the team would say, oh, we're planning on rebuilding, retooling, we need to be smart, we need a draft. Great. So why are you getting rid of picks? Oh, well, we want prospects. Well, awesome. Let's play them more often. Oh, but we want to play them in a winning environment. Well, your team sucks. It can't win. So how are you doing that? Again, everything you're telling me, if I'm your manager, everything that you've told me you're going to perform to, you have not performed to. If I was giving you a performance review, you have failed. So again, I come back to this question. Why do I pay you? I shouldn't. Like, I think actually if I were to go down and pretend this is a performance review, you told me 3 months ago, here's what you're going to do, and you couldn't do any of them. So therefore, your performance is lacking. And in the business world, I'm so sorry. It's time to replace you.
JJ, any other comments?
Oh, no, I think Chris pretty much hit it right there. I mean, those are fair questions. And if I'm a season ticket holder, I am. You know, I like those are the types of questions that I would be asking. You know, I mean, it doesn't stop at why should I give you another dollar? You know, my hard earned money with this direction. You know, lack of direction and all that sort of stuff. I've got to ask myself too. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is a good plan. It's a solid plan, but are you the right guy to lead this? Because from what I've seen so far, you're not.
And that's actually,
I think there's a bigger trust factor that comes into play here.
And that's a good point. The plan itself, I have no issues with it.
And you know what? You know, the whole team tank, team playoffs and all, you know, that's understandable. I completely understand where they're coming from. When they say they want to bring up the kids in a winning environment, I mean, if you look at all the good teams and, you know, in professional sports, I mean, they do that. San Antonio Spurs, who I know that the Canucks have reached out to, you know, and they visited and all that, and the Detroit Red Wings, you know, while they have these good players, you know, they have the Tim Duncans and the Pavel Datsyuks, and, you know, the Canucks obviously have the Sedins. You want to maximize what you have. So you want to make sure that the kids that you're bringing into the system, they learn, you know. But my problem is how they're executing this. I mean, you've got all these still good players, you've got these high-level prospects that are coming in, and then you sign guys like Spezza and Dorsett to long-term contracts. Well, how does that help things? So the plan itself, yeah, it makes sense. The execution, I really don't know if Benning's the right guy to execute it.
All right, before we let you go, JJ, one more thing. Adam could not be on the podcast today, but he did leave a very, very long-winded message about his thoughts on today. Today was probably the most frustrating day Canucks fans have had since Game 7 against Boston. Everything this team does or doesn't do in this case seems so shockingly out of touch with both what fans want and with how teams operate in today's NHL. This team is tied for 24th in the league, and the management is somehow shockingly worse than any on-ice product we've seen this year. But sadly, this team is going to get much, much worse, but it's tough to see how they're going to get better anytime soon. The team's current youth is promising, but they could have added so much more today and failed. It's hard to stay optimistic about this team when there is no payoff. And then he adds, tell Clay it's his fault, stupid Clayoffs. I mean, that about sums it up right there.
I think so.
Like,
I think so.
I can't understand how you piss away assets like that.
Is this rock bottom, you guys? Is this it?
You know what? I don't think it is. I think it's actually going to get worse.
I've got a bad feeling about that, too. I was working for the Canucks back in the mid-90s when, you know, the whole Messier and Keane.
Dark years, yeah.
The dark years. So, yeah, there were many, many times when you thought, okay, it can't really get any worse. And then we get pick up guys like Harry York and all of them. And it's, you know, nothing against Harry York, hard worker, good guy and all that. But
the thing about those years is, yeah, you thought it couldn't get any worse. And you always had that little bit of optimism thinking, that, oh, they're going to finally turn the corner. This is it. Yeah, they're going to finally turn the corner. And here, I think you and I are both saying this, JJ. They haven't turned no corner here. In fact, they're still on their way down. And when we hit there, it's going to be a sad, sad day.
No, and you know what? Even back then, at least you had a GM, and you know, you can hate Mike Keenan all you want, but the guy was a master of trades.
He wasn't a GM though. He was a part of the management team.
You know the other thing
he was the GM.
No, dude, go back.
He was
coach, managing director, guy in charge.
Sorry, yeah.
So, one more thing. You know what the other worst thing that people haven't talked about is about keeping Hamhuis and Verbata? It really screws up their plans to tank.
Oh, God, this team, one, won't tank, two, they won't make the playoffs. They'll probably finish like 1 point out of playoff position. They'll get the highest amount of points that they can get to put themselves in the worst draft position as possible. Because that's how this team seems to be rolling.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Can I throw something to you guys?
One more.
Before I want to wrap up here, but you guys, you know, we were talking earlier about the Brian Bickle thing coming in and, you know, like that last-ditch thing from Chicago. I really don't think the Canucks would have been able to do that to take on Bickle's contract.
If only because they've mismanaged the cap so poorly.
Pretty much, yeah. And even now, I mean, I think we saw Brandon Sutter was practicing today. I don't know if he was in a contact but they can't activate Brandon Sutter without sending someone down.
So in other words, they're hooped.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, they could send Yannick Weber down. He'll have to go through waivers again, depending on when he comes back, but...
So in other words,
they don't have enough cap space right now to bring.
So in other words, what you see is what you get for the rest of the season with this team.
Well, I mean, it is. I mean,
pending injury.
They're not going to make that many changes till the end of the year. But they could lose another player on. Well, I guess I don't know how waivers work after the trade deadline.
I think they can still lose players on waivers. I just don't think the player can play in the playoffs.
Right. Yeah.
Anything else? Last words. This is, by the way, like. This does feel like rock bottom.
Well, you were born when during the first dark years, Matt. So this is your indoctrination to how dark things could be as a Canucks fan.
All right, let's get into Ask CHB. I guess JJ, you want to stick around for this?
Sure.
Yeah, all right. You might as well. You've already stuck it out for 49 minutes of this.
It's time for Ask CHB.
So here we are at the bright spot of this piss-poor episode of a C4 podcast when we're pissed off at the organization, and it's Ask CHB where we get you, our listeners, to provide us how pissed off you happen to be at the organization. So on Facebook, I'm going to go over to a question that was asked a couple years ago, and that was asking you, instead of gaining some assets on trade deadline day, the Canucks lose one instead, that being Cracknell. Should this be the beginning of the end of Benning and this management regime? So we got our podcast favorite Brian T. Klein says, the season is a write-off anyway. Let Hamhuis and Verbata play out their contracts and walk. Continue tanking the season, drop in the top five, and develop the kids. Scouting is what Benning does best, so let him focus on that. Clearly evaluating and managing assets is not his forte, so let him play to his strengths. Until they are closer to be a contender, then get a GM-coach combo that is better at adding final touches for a cup run and who can coach and play or coach a game to win, not just roll four lines and pray for the best. So that is probably by far the most optimistic comment we got from Brian, and it's saying the guy doesn't know how to manage assets. All he can do is draft, and we know we won't be good for a few years, so just let him have his thing until we are good and then get rid of him. It's resigned to the fact the Canucks are going to suck, and that's the optimistic comment.
I'm just shaking my head. It's bad. I blame JJ.
It's all JJ's fault. And then Sandy Marbeck says, I have always been suspicious of Benning coming from Boston after all. So, again, like we have lots of Facebook comments here, lots of Twitter comments, and I don't have time to get into all, but that's what we had on Facebook. And if we go over to Twitter, we asked, with the trade deadline come and gone, how do you feel about the Canucks management and the future of the organization? The first response was from Andy Cole, at AndyCole84, and he sent us a picture of a train wreck. I guess he's telling us that things aren't good. We've got Desai87 at Vasim Desai says, this management has no clue on what they're doing. We'll have 18 Bergerons on our team when all is said and done.
Oh, you can never have too many two-way players.
Oh, I think he means Marc-Andre Bergeron.
We have Bruin tweet from Ange at Mighty Stickbug says, still pretty sure Benning is a Bruin spy come to destroy the organization from within.
Pulling a Messier.
Mm-hmm. Snepsis Mustache, at Snepsis Mustache, says, Toronto Maple Leaf, circa 2005.
Sure feels like it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Matt.
The other thing that I wasn't even thinking about is Calgary and Toronto all inherit all these picks, and yet they're still probably going to draft higher than Vancouver. Let that sink in for another minute.
And I think summarizing everyone's feelings is Lindsay, at Linz VDW. Everything is just how I felt, too. So here we are at the end of this train wreck of a podcast, train wreck of a trade deadline, and pretty much a organization that's currently running off the rails towards a cliff with no bridge across. In fact, the Canucks are going to blow up and hopefully figure out that they suck so much that they actually do the right thing and rebuild. But that's maybe a little harsh.
We didn't even get to talk about it too much, but Hunter Shinkarik, oh, there's another stupid trade.
Oh, well, we didn't want to go a week back.
But you know what? Like, very quickly, Hunter Shinkarik for Marcus Granlund, at least give Shinkarik a chance. And then maybe you move him for Marcus Granlund.
He wasn't going to fit any organization. We needed another center.
Like, they weren't even willing to give him a try.
Who knows? The fact that he's a top scorer in Utica. I mean, I get that the AHL is not the NHL, but it's interesting that a defensive-minded coach is still getting production out of a prospect forward, young kid, everything that the Canucks have said they need, and yeah, no dice. Anyhow, whatever.
One more thing that Benning mentions in his press conference. I can't believe I watched the whole thing, by the way. He says, we're going to play our young players. We'll be calling up players from Utica, whether it be Gaunce, Grenier, and Mike Zalewski. Doesn't mention Jordan Subban, by the way.
That's because we have Spiza and Barkowski.
I don't think Subban's ready for the bigs anyway.
I'm not even convinced that they keep him in the organization. Like, Benning has clearly shown a penchant for trading away any players or prospects that were not drafted by him.
Well, I think what he's done is, I don't know if that's really the case, but I think what he's done is he made a pretty decisive decision, you know, when he first came on with which prospects he wants and which prospects he likes and which ones he doesn't. And, I mean, it's the same thing with Shinkaruk. I mean, they were saying that they didn't like Shinkaruk, right, or Benning didn't like Shinkaruk right from the start, so he was doing pretty much as soon as he came on board.
So, final question, JJ. Do you continue to watch the Canucks the rest of the season, or do you watch a repeat of Matlock?
Matlock sounds good. There's some good TV on right now, so I don't know.
And Matt, do you continue to watch the Canucks, or
if
do you watch a repeat?
Because we
got to
do a podcast every week.
Well, you could always watch the highlights, or you know, read the paper and pretend that you watch the Vancouver.
We're going to be providing Tank Watch for the next 2 months.
We'll just rename our podcast the C4 Tank. To be honest, I think the only reason I'll ever watch the Canucks is so I can talk to you about how upset I am with the organization each and every episode. Come back for the Dark Lord. The Dark Lord will return.
I'm issuing a challenge to anyone who's at these town hall meetings. Come pissed off. Like, bottle all this, and on Friday morning or whenever when's the next town hall?
Well, there's one Friday.
There's one Friday and one on Tuesday. And one on Tuesday. You better come pissed off, because you know what? I cannot imagine how you would want to sink any of your hard-earned dollars into a product so bad in a market where, let's be honest, it's even harder to live in these days than ever before. You got to ask yourself the question, is this a team I really want to continue paying money for night after night, when management and ownership and the team, they run around in circles like this and there is no clear direction? You got to ask yourself that question.
And afterwards, come on the C4 podcast to tell us how it went. But on behalf of Matt Lee at Matt Lee 980, JJ, who's on the phone at Canucks Hockey, we got Clay, who's not here, at Canuck Clay, and Adam at Adam FOC. I am Chris Golden at Lightforce, signing off about C4. You can find us online at CanucksHockeyBlog.com or Facebook, Facebook.com/C4Podcast and Facebook.com/CanucksHockeyBlog. With all of that anger, piss and vinegar, vitriol and hatred, we're out.